Witches and mortals seldom do mix. But when mixed marriage is on the cards, insanity pursues with the classic 60s sitcom Bewitched, with your co-hosts, Vicky Ray, Rod Labby, and Keith Chandler. Witches have never been so exposed before.
Hello, welcome to the Literary License Podcast, and it's Bewitched Day, where we discuss seasons 2, episodes 5 through 8. And before we get started, let's find out who's with us. We got Vicky Ray. Hello, Vicky.
Hello, guys. What's up?
And Jesse Fultz. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, y'all. What's going on?
And myself, Keith Shago. Before we get started, let's find out what we've been up to. Starting with you, Jesse, what have you been up to?
Oh, good. Jesse first. What have you been doing, Jess?
I guess I've been doing a lot of at-home projects. I had to strip a chair of its paint and repaint it, I guess.
What can you
do down here? Yeah, and then I get to cane it after doing some signs, just finished up other furniture and... I've also been, what have I been watching? I've been watching old episodes of, Sabrina, like the original show, not
the original show. What was her name? Yeah. The actress. Who's that actress? Quick.
Melissa something.
Melissa Joan Hart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Too. I've been trying to find something good and witchy that I haven't already watched. And I don't know, when I started watching this, it had more charm than like the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I feel like after thinking about the show,
it's more realistic.
Not realistic. I felt like it was so many genres that it tried to be, and it had a different tone in the first few episodes, first season maybe, than it did later on. It felt like it tried to shift into so many different things. It tried to be funny. It tried to be horror, then it tried to be campy. I just didn't feel like it knew what it wanted
really
to say.
Really campy. That's a good description. Mess. Campy is a really good description. It is. I really liked it.
Yeah, and I was so disappointed. I was disappointed by the very last season, but I really loved the first season just because of how the first episode starts out, especially. I don't know why, but I really wish that show would have gone a different direction. But overall, I found the original show to be much more charming, despite being a more comedic take on Sabrina's character. And I kind of wish they also had that same charm in the actual show, because I felt like it didn't. And I felt like that would have helped lessen the hefty blow of how bad some of the characters were, how bad some of the acting was.
Are we talking about Chilling Sabrina ended? Or are we talking about old Sabrina?
No, I'm talking about the Chilling Adventures, because the original Sabrina
was too
funny.
I loved it because it was so dark. I liked it too.
Yeah, I thought the first couple seasons were better than how it ended. I was very disappointed.
I didn't like how it ended. I thought it was kind of, I did not like the end. There was no, it was like after watching it for all these years, then finally getting them to finish their fourth season, they kind of whisked their way through it a little bit. And I was really, I was kind of hoping for a better closing episode, especially for fans, but what are you going to do? It's Netflix.
I mean, I think what you have to do is you have to look at the history of Sabrina. Sabrina started out as part of the Archie's comic.
That's right. Oh my God, I totally forgot that.
And so it was done on a very 60s, before the drug culture took over. About
wholesome.
Very wholesome. And this is a group of teenagers. And then Sabrina was less like, a wacky teenager and that sort of thing. And then it transposed into a Saturday morning cartoon, which we have the Archies and the Sabrina Hour sort of thing.
And
that was very much in the vein of Hanna-Barbera comedy cartoon series of the 70s. So basically, when the TV series came across on, No, it was a Nickelodeon show.
Was it?
Oh, and so basically, at that time in the 90s, teen comedies, along with the Disney Channel, were coming out with teen comedies that were very much in the format of a 1980s comedy series. So it was very like comedy jokes and stuff like this. And there's a lot of follow through going through with storylines and stuff like this.
Exactly.
The 90s?
that this is the 90s children television.
Right.
At the same time, animation was coming to new heights. But what you had with children's is that children's channels are coming up with their own situation comedies sort of thing. You know, yeah, thing like Sister Sister, Sabrina, yeah. Raven, all those kind of shows.
My kids tortured Clarissa me with all of them.
Clarissa Explains It all those kind of shows at that time. At that time, the comics were taking a nosedive as far as Archie and Sabrina goes. Then in 2000, they decided to revive them. And what happens, they gave them a darker tone and gave them to a more horror tone because of Buffy and things like that were moving horror forward to teenagers. And Goosebumps was actually bringing that forward too as well. So they decided to bring that. And that's why here we are in late 20-teens in the 2020. And that's when we ended up with Riverdale. The darker version of Archie, and then Sabrina is the darker version.
I loved them all. I don't know what they're going to do with. I'm pretty sure they're going to have another season of Archie. Well, what the hell?
Riverdale.
Why can't I speak today?
Well, Riverdale is a bit different because Riverdale is part of the CW universe.
Yeah.
I do think that if Sabrina was part of the CW universe, it might have lasted longer. But the problem is that what they were supposed to do, but they couldn't get together with CW, is that they're supposed to have crossovers between Riverdale and Sabrina.
I was going
to
say they never did that. Were they partnered? Did they have anything that binds them at all?
In the comic books, yes. Riverdale is the next town over from where Sabrina lives.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about the CW and Netflix. They didn't do the crossover, so one doesn't really have anything to do with the other.
The two different companies that produced them.
Yeah, like even in the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic books, those things are connected even in those, but it was kind of annoying. That they did. I mean, maybe not because I don't know.
They crossed over Josie and the Pussycats.
Is actually a little more. Yeah, the comic book series is more interesting, and it's weird because it was directed by the same guy that wrote the comic, so I don't know how the show went in the totally different direction than the comic books. Because I was actually more intrigued by the comic books than I was the TV show. I thought they tried a little harder in the beginning to make it match the tone, but then later on it just totally deviated into something that I kind of wish they hadn't. I wish they would have stuck with the tone of the comics because I felt like the comics captures like that traditional old horror feeling of like what you want witches to be like, but then also old horror films and stuff like that. And then the show kind of loses that and turns into a sloppy Riverdale kind of thing. Especially when they utter the term endgame, which I hate. Like, people need to stop using that term. Ugh.
Who did
especially
the endgame?
Like, who romances.
Said endgame?
Nicholas Scratch, he said that to Sabrina. He said, Sabrina, we're endgame. And I'm like, oh, please, I hate you. Harvey and Sabrina are supposed to be together, but I don't know. They didn't give Harvey anything to do in this show.
Harvey.
I liked Harvey in the original show because him and Sabrina were just friends for the longest time and they kind of built the relationship. But in this one, they were just together. And I didn't really care for Rosalind either. I'm sorry. She just wasn't a good friend. And I didn't really see why Sabrina even liked to hang out with them because the mortal world was actually kind of boring. I always wanted to see more of the witchy world than the human world.
I think what they tried to do is try to create some kind of, they tried to take a situation that was a lot darker for a teen audience and try to bring it very back to the teen angst. And I think that's where its problem was because Sabrina, the comic book itself is like, you know, she's pretty much grown a little bit sort of thing. And so, you know, and the comic books are a lot more gorier and a lot more darker than the TV.
Yes. And I love that.
And it's almost like, oh, we can't have this because Netflix is doing this for a teenage audience, even though they wanted the adult audience. So if they made it for the adult audience, I think the teens would have watched, you know what I mean? It probably would have kept it. They kept the darker tone. They started out very dark, but then all of a sudden it's like, then it kind of went into like teenage romances and teenage relationships hard it is to grow up to be a teenager, and it's kind of like, well,
you already have shows that are doing that, and Sabrina could have been that show that did things totally different. I mean, the comic book already is, and then when you have like a show about a satanic witches so blatantly and so gory, I mean, that's not it started out being a show that of a nature of things that you didn't even traditionally see on TV.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the Christian risque. Church wasn't happy.
No, definitely not. Well, I mean, even American Horror.
I think it bogged down in the wokeness as well, being a bit too woke.
Yes, that ruined it too. First of all, it doesn't go like if anyone who studies metaphysics or like the occult, it doesn't go because first of all, in magic and witchcraft, they don't focus on like the whole feminism thing because they focus on the unity of masculine and feminine energy. So it just doesn't make sense because Lucifer or Baphomet himself is symbolizing the masculine and feminine energies within
they got it wrong.
One single body. So the fact that they were focusing on all of that, it really, you could see they were removed from the aspects of like being true to like being magical and about witches and more about being political. And that's when I started to get turned off because they weren't even focusing on keeping that tone. And I started to get lost in that too, because I want to see a show or a movie take like magic and the occult seriously and make it like a serious horror. I'm kind of tired of seeing that comedic campy horror thing, like the babysitter TV shows and movies that are out there with, you know, the killer babysitters and all the killer teenagers and stuff. Like, I just want to see a real horror film that's about witches that sticks with that tone, because that's so fascinating.
I've got one for you.
I have yet.
I've got one for you.
What?
I watched it the other night ago, so I'm going to my spiel really quick. But I've been watching in between trips. I've been watching like 1930s horror, and I'm just totally loving it. Like, I watched 1932's, was it Freaks? Was it 32? I'm pretty sure it was 32. Oh my God, watch that. It was like, it was disturbing Freaks? Watching it sober, let alone stoned. it's just a messed up movie. And I'm like going, wow. It's just like, it was hard. It wasn't so hard to watch, but it was really creepy. And I think the director caught the essence of these human beings and what the, you know, it was outstanding old film. And I watched this other one. Oh God, I was talking to Joe about it. Oh gosh. It was with Christopher Lee.
City of the Dead.
When I was trying City to find this dead? Movie for a long time, because when I was little, I watched this old black and white movie about witches. Well, again, they're going satanic, so you might not like it, but it's so worth the watch. And I was so scared after watching this movie when I was five. My mother and father were out for the evening. I had to go in sleep between my brother's beds because I was terrified. And I mean, I was watching it through older eyes finally, 50 years later, and it's just an excellent movie. It's just the Gregorian chant going on, and you got the hoods, and you got the beautiful Ooh. Blonde college waif who's going to be sacrificed for Satan. It's got it all, man. It's just a great
wow. It's got great atmosphere, as I remember as well.
The atmosphere is fantastic, and it's so that's
and this one is called City of the Dead
with
Dead.
Christopher
Lee.
Oh my
God.
It's about a 1950s film, actually.
50 something.
I think it's an American film. You think it's English, but I think it's actually an American film.
I don't know, but all I know is it scared the bejesus out of me when I was little. Then again, I was going to Catholic school then, and the nuns used to tell me, bad girl, that the devil would be sleeping under my bed, causing me lots of trauma throughout my childhood, and gives you the person you see here before you now. But other than that, I've been watching some out of the box kind of films and stuff, and getting ready to go to New York. Came back from St. Thomas last week. My daughter is so good to me. So anyway, going home to see
City of the Dead is a 1960 supernatural horror film.
Is it 1960?
It was produced in the United Kingdom, but set in America, and the British actors were required to speak with North American accents.
They did pretty good.
It takes place in 1692 in a fictional Whitewood, Massachusetts.
Yep.
So, and then switches to the present day.
It just really scared good the film, hell out of me when I was little. Scared the hell. What about you?
Carrying on to the witches theme, a good thing to watch on Netflix is Fear Street 1996.
I watched that. Oh my God.
Fear Street?
Yeah.
Fear Street 1996.
Is it good?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. The second part airs today. And
oh, it does air today. I was wondering when they were going to have the second part. It's like, don't leave me hanging like that.
Yeah, they're three movies, and they're all interconnected. And the first one's 1996, I think it's 1880 something, and basically about this witch's curse in this town. that corrects, that causes all these murders from happening. So that's quite good as well. What else have I been watching? I watched Resident Evil, the Infinite Darkness. I really enjoyed that. It's 4-part, 30 episodes, only 4 episodes.
Oh, it was a series?
Yep. That was very good.
The animated one, right? It's animated.
Okay. It was animated. Okay. I was wondering.
And I quite enjoyed that. And another good series I started watching is an Australian series called Sisters. And basically what's happened is this old guy who's dying basically owns this fertility clinic. And apparently he didn't have sperm donors. So basically he's pregnating all these women. And on his deathbed, he sends this letter to the newspaper and it breaks the news. And his one daughter who's living with him finds out that she has about 80 brothers and sisters out there. It's funny. It's joyful. I mean, for instance, before this all happens, she goes on a date and she decides that she wants to have sex. So she goes on this date with this guy, has sex with him, then has this great big party where they all show up. And he shows up with another woman and she goes, are you my sister? She goes, no, this is your brother. And it's the guy she has sex with. So she gets,
oh my
God,
thank
you for helping my family,
not
sex with my brother. It's funny.
Oh my God.
I highly recommend it. Really good.
What's it called? I love the Australians. The Australians.
I think I've heard of that.
It started this week on Netflix. I'm really enjoying it. And Master of None, I'm really enjoying as well. So. Master of None going to the woke. So there are a lot of episodes about being woke, but they're not hitting you over the head with any of it. So it's quite good. And going back to Sabrina about the woke, it's a bit like the transgender character in it. It's like we spent so much time explaining it to us. And to be honest, you probably didn't need it.
True.
And then she ends up with a guy anyway, so you're kind of confused there. But
that was so confusing.
The thing is, I think what they need to do is it's fine to have a cross pollination of different characters and whatever they're going through. I think the problem basically is that we don't need it to be explained to us. Just have the characters live in their lives. You'll pick up on it and don't realize that they're normal people. Once they start telling
us
the ins and outs of their lives, you're kind of going, okay. It's like gay characters. Define a gay character as long as they're not talking about their sex life all the time.
They kind of treat the audience like they're stupid. It's like you don't need to use the script as exposition so the audience gets it. I mean, that's what I miss about like older films. It's like they treated their audience like they could, you know, get it. So they didn't have to, you know, have a character serve as an expository kind of, agent. Like the character is literally just exposition, and that's the only reason the character's in the show or movie. And I feel like this happens all the time. And weirdly enough, in like teenage themed horror, I've seen this a lot specifically because I'm always trying to find good horror, but it's so hard to find these days, unless you go back into older horror. But they did that a lot with this show Sabrina, and especially with the whole woke aspect, that I lost a lot of interest. And they focus in weird avenues, like when Sabrina wanted to create like this kind of all girl themed kind of support group for girls in the school. And it's like, I want to see more about like the witch stuff. Like, I don't care about your politics. I just want to see witch stuff happen in the show. Yeah, and it's like,
I think
successfully, they have to have a theme though.
Yeah, no, but I think successfully you can add politics and you can add the wokeness to your programming. Twilight Zone, the original series, did it all the bloody time. And it's like,
it was subtle, it was smart, and it was subtle.
Precisely. And you walked away from it going, huh. It's like they didn't have to hit you over the head with it or explain it to you. It's up for the audience to sit there and work it out. Strangers on the Train, gay characters. Rope, another Alfred Hitchcock, gay characters. You know, the thing is, they didn't have to tell you that they were gay. You watched them living their lives, know they were murderous or whatever. But at the same time, all the information is there for you. They didn't have to sit there and go, we're queer, we're here, get used to it. You know what I mean? They didn't need to, they didn't need to explain their whole lives to us or something like this. You watched it and you enjoyed the characters and you got a hint of it. Even Will and Grace at the time. I mean, you know, if you look at Will and Grace before the wokeness came across, they were, you know, two gay guys. So Will, I think, had more of a relationship with Grace than he had with any guy on the show. But at the same time, they weren't telling you about how hard it was to be gay and all this other stuff. I mean, the new series does that now. Now that they brought it back, that's more preachy. But the original, it's like basically it's just what they were. Roseanne had a gay character on it as well. Her boss was, and it was like he just happened to be. You know what I mean? And that's what brings people in. That's what makes people more accepting, realizing that we're all thinking we're not preaching to you. You know that basically we all have, you know, human problems like everyone else, and everyone's in the same melting pot sort of thing. Instead of like, look at me. Or like a caterpillar would say, who are you?
Oh God, don't get me going.
Who are you?
I'm so mad that I missed that.
You just blew us off, admit it.
No, I didn't.
You were hungover again.
No, I wasn't even, I was prepared the day before. And because I thought it was that day for some reason. And then I woke up early that day, super excited. And I'm like, wait, it's not today. It's the next day. So I went back to sleep. And then I didn't realize it was at a different time. So I totally missed that. I was so disappointed. I was so looking forward to doing Alice in Wonderland.
You could have jumped in anytime.
Well, I mean, if you really missed out on it, you can always do Moby Dick next month.
Yeah, if you could read Moby Dick. There you go. If you missed us that much for our classics edition.
And I actually finished it. Actually,
I did not.
I did.
It's killing me. So. Herman Melville.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it gets better in the middle.
It's a fantastic story. It's just overwritten, personally. So.
Oh, I have a question. I just recently watched the movie Practical Magic. What did you guys think of it? Did you guys see
Practical Magic? About 120 times. It's one of my favorite movies.
It's one of mine too. I really like it. As simple as it is, it captures the kind of vibes that I like with the whole witchy thing. I didn't like the beginning with the story with the witch in the beginning, their ancestor. I thought the music was so not fitting for the story that they were telling, and it was so distracting. I didn't like the beginning two songs, but I liked the rest of the songs. The rest of them were great, but there was a couple songs in there I didn't like. There's like this weird country sounding chick that I used to hear when I was a kid, and I hated that song, and then I heard it in this movie and I'm like, oh, I don't like it, but the movie's good. I like the movie.
I love the movie
if you
too.
Want some really good witch movies, you should try the Suspiria trilogy by Dario Argento.
Oh god, yeah, you love that series. Jess,
oh yeah, I haven't finished the trilogy, but I have seen the remake, and I've also seen the original Suspiria.
Watch the original Suspiria. The second one's Inferno, and the third one, which I actually worked on. It's not great, but it's okay. Tears of the Mother. It's the
you worked on that?
Yeah.
What'd you do on it?
I actually edited the script and worked on set during the making of the film. Yeah,
that's cool.
With Dario Nicolati and Asia Argento, and that's when I realized that the reason why they're dubbed. His films are dubbed just because all the characters are from everywhere in Europe and they don't speak. They're all speaking their own language when they're doing it. So the German actress is speaking German whilst the English person is speaking English while the Italian person is speaking Italian.
I've never understood how he pulled that off. Can't tell.
He did it with every single one of his films. So it was quite interesting. I guess you just wait for the person to pause and that's when you do your lines.
I guess that's what I was thinking.
Did he do that for the original? I mean, for his remake of Suspiria?
I've seen it. I prefer, I thought it was over long. I thought the acting was in it was really good. I liked the way that it was filmed. I also like, there's a lot of things I like about it. I like, what's her name in it? Tilda Swinton playing the different characters. I thought that
she was really cool. I liked the idea and the way she played the character. Because in the original, I don't feel like the witches are as prevalent. It's more subtle and secretive. I mean, you know that they are witches, but they don't build upon the characters as much. And I didn't like what they did with her at the end. I was very disappointed that she became like this mostly decapitated woman. And I don't really understand what happened at the end. I watched it a second time recently to try to understand it. It's slightly confusing. It becomes almost psychedelic and gory. I kind of get it now after seeing it the second time. I think Dakota Johnson's character is like the manifestation of the Mother Suspirium, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Have you caught Salem on the CW? I think it's on Tubi now.
I love that show.
There you go. I was going to say, that's got to be witchy enough for you. So
it's also so good.
There's also the short-lived series, Witches of Eastwick, that the main series
I heard it. Is that good? I know when
it wasn't bad.
The mom from Riverdale I know was in that. I like her acting in Riverdale. I don't like the characters, though. I think the writing
kept up with that show because they left us hanging and they never revived it. And I loved it.
I think it got a bit lost. I think I knew where they were going, but they're getting a bit lost in the original season. I think at the original season, if they tightened it and kind of moved it forward, but it's almost like they were like going slowly because we're going to bring Daryl Van Thorne in, and because they went so slow, but I think by the time that character is introduced, is like people stop watching it. So, but as far as Suspiria goes, the remake, it was okay. I do think that you probably could cut a good 45 minutes out of it, made a better film. I think it was overly long. But
I agree.
I prefer the original only because it's the sound and the look of it. And I like the way that
the colors.
He used Snow White as the animation. That's what he used. That's why the colors are blue and red and bright primary colors. He used it because he wanted to make a live action film look like an animated horror film.
Oh, that's cool. That's really interesting. Wow.
And then when you see this, the second one, it has a different feel about it, but that's more done in everything's done in like a water, like everything's done in like aqua colors
because when you watch this movie, considering it was the 70s, I mean, I know it was also in different time period, but it was so colorless, it was devoid of color, whereas like Suspiria, you're kind of like, if you've seen the original, you're expecting almost a psychedelic kind of colorful horror. They don't have enough colorful horror in my opinion. I think that's why I like Dark Shadow,
because put his own stamp on it, wanted to go somewhere in another direction. I think that's probably the reason why.
Yeah,
because they had that. Even the music wasn't that outstanding. I mean, the version of the music. I mean, I love the score of Suspiria. I mean, it's on my playlist.
Mm. Wrench. Yeah, I know. But I think Goblin. Is it by Goblin or something?
Yeah, it is.
I used to listen to their playlist too. It's very spooky. It's very jarring. I can't say that this music is very jarring. I do wish there would have been a little bit more witchy stuff going on, because I felt like even that was more not there as much as it was in the original, because they were very murderous in the first one, like very gory, interest, like being killed and impaled by stained glass. I mean, very visual, interesting things going on, and I don't
very
feel like enough
well.
Of that happened.
There's this thing that something was going on, but you weren't quite able to put it all together. And then there's, you know, it's not like when all the maggots fall in the gym, and then you got like have her behind the sheet.
Yeah. And how perfect that Joan Bennett is in it.
And another thing is, if you ever want to do karaoke and you can't sing, do the Suspiria soundtrack. La 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 la. It works out really well.
Yeah, like there was so much tension in that movie. I felt like this movie was more, I hate to say it because I do like it, but it felt a little more boring and slow. And I like that there was more tension in the first one. Like from go, there was so much tension and it was very continuous. Even if it was, I mean, some of it's kind of silly looking back at it now. It looks kind of silly compared to a lot of horror, but it's still really good. I've seen it a couple of times and I still think it's very cool visually, and it's a very interesting
movie. The best way to see Suspiria is either with a really, really good sound system or be plugged into it. And then it's like,
okay,
you start hearing things behind you and everything. I mean, it does everything. All the original has like sounds coming from behind you and whispering going on behind you. And it's
it does, doesn't it?
Oh, the one part that was so hard for me to watch was the part when they were doing the dancing and the girl was being contorted. That was so real looking. Oh, 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 I almost threw up when I saw it. Like, oh, that's so gross.
Well, if LA had more contortion, then I'd probably go and see it more.
So. Yeah, true.
Now, this brings us to Bewitched Season 2, Episode 5, The Joker is the Card. When Samantha's attempt at a peaceful dinner with Darren and Dora is ruined with practical jokes, the witches realize that Sam's prank-loving Uncle Arthur, played by Paul Lynn, has come for a visit. Arthur takes a liking to Darren and offers to teach him a spell that will give Andora a taste of her own medicine. Darren refuses Arthur's help until Darren faces one antagonistic encounter too many with Andora. The only problem is the spell Arthur teaches Darren is also a practical joke. Once they find all this out, Samantha, Andora, and Darren believe Uncle Arthur is the one who needs to be taught a lesson. And because Vicky is such a fan of Uncle Arthur, Vicky, we start with you. What are your thoughts of the Joker?
I was so psyched to see Uncle Arthur finally. Oh my God, he's such a blast. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you not laugh at Paul Lynn? I don't care if people, you either love him or you hate him. A lot of people didn't like the fact that he was on the show. I guess he could be irritating, and most wise asses can, as we all know. We tolerate a lot of wise ass here, but he was so much fun to watch. And I mean, just the way he was playing Darren and stuff, you know.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to have, what is it, a peaceful dinner? And they keep screwing with Andora, and it's probably not a good idea to screw with Andora. And when Uncle Arthur comes up, they decide, you know, well, he's messed with us, so we're going to screw back with him. And then they make it look like in reality that the spell worked and Darren has magical properties, you know. But I mean, it's just good, clean fun when he's there, because I don't know. He just laugh at the laugh. He just makes you laugh. I just look at him and I start laughing. I totally love Paul Lynn. I loved him in, what was it, the Hollywood Squares. I mean, anything he did, I just loved.
Well, there's a gleam in his eye, isn't there?
Yeah, he's definitely got
that
mischief.
Little gleam in his eye sort of thing, especially like when he's teaching Darren that spell.
Oh my God, what was this?
Oh my God.
What was it? What were the words?
So good.
Ziggy, ziggy, boom, boom, or something like that. And then he starts doing the cowbell and the kazoo. And I mean, he looks like a total moron.
So
and just like, oh,
earnest.
My God.
I know. I love this episode so much. It's like, this block of episodes were so good. I mean, I think it's almost, I hate to say this because I love the first season, but I think these episodes are almost better than anything that's in season one, maybe.
Well, they're a little more grounded.
I don't know. I loved every episode. Yes, well, and they know
this episode.
There's some fresh new material in there too.
Well, another thing is, this episode we get Andora calls Darren by the word Darren, first time ever.
Yes.
For once.
Until Practical Joker.
He was almost startled to hear his own name. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was
he calls her mother
when I was watching this, and I go, oh my God, it's Uncle Arthur. I finally got to the episodes with Uncle Arthur. But I mean, you know, you get all these other crazy characters that are going to start popping in soon too, and it just takes off from there.
When Andora gets struck with that, I think chocolate or whatever, it almost looks like she wasn't expecting that. It looks so painfully like unexpected. Every time I see that, it's like, it's like, did they leave that a secret or something? Because her reaction to that is just uncomfortable.
I'm beginning to think they're related to everybody in the witching world. They've got cousins,
probably
uncles, you know, they know what's a elves. The cousin elf.
Yeah, elves. The elf thing is weird.
I mean, the Andora and I like the idea that the relationships have moved forward between Andora, Samantha, and Darren as well. I thought that was fantastically well, especially like you know, when they realize it's Uncle Arthur, and they, like, and even like in the beginning before the opening credits, you know, it's like, you know, they got, you know, you can see that there's a closeness there. And then when they realize, you know, then Samantha and Andora, you know, they're all kind of like bickering with each other because they think that each other's pulling a practical joke. And then Andora and Samantha goes, oh, wait, where is he? And then she's like, is that you, Uncle Arthur, in the bottle? And then she looks up at Uncle Arthur. But there's a nice closeness there sort of thing. And then, of course, when the show opens, what we get is, you know, Uncle Arthur pulling a practical joke in Andora. And, of course, Darren and Arthur laughing at it and the way Andora reacts to it. You know, oh, you guys are juvenile, blah, de da, de da.
And she makes but then hair long.
But then we get like the spell where you basically teaches Darren the spell, and then Darren does it on Andorra, and Andorra just sitting there going, what the hell are you doing? And then, you know, then it doesn't work. And Darren does it again, sort of thing, and doesn't work. And she goes, and Darren says something to her, and she goes, oh, I'm just waiting to see what you do next. I'm waiting for your encore.
I know that was the best. This episode was one of my favorites.
Did you find yourself, what's the word, grimacing a little bit? I was like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah, because you so, he was so earnest.
Don't do that.
He was so earnest and believed that it did something.
Watching Darren do that.
Oh, it was. It was. But it was, that's what's so good. And then you see Uncle Arthur in the background just keeling over in laughter in the hallways, you know.
I wonder,
that was the best,
if there was outtakes so to this, because there certainly has to be outtakes to this somewhere. I bet you there's got to be
somewhere,
because I would have just died laughing if I had to deal with these people doing that with the kazoo and the cowbell.
But I also think that there must have been some free flow to this as well, because when Arthur goes, you know, the first time he does it, he goes, no, you need to sing it. And doesn't know you need to do it. You know what I mean? I kind of wonder if that was all.
Brings up the xylophone thing.
Because,
oh, I could totally see that.
So, and you know, the simple fact that when Andorra turns herself into a bird, and bring her back.
Yeah,
she's family. You know, Andorra, you don't like her either. But she's family.
I wouldn't screw. Andorra seems like the ultra witch, you know. You don't really want to mess with her too much.
Well, I think she, you know, I think she has a sense of humor, but just as long as the sense of humor is not played on her.
Yeah, as it should be.
I mean, she's the grand matriarch anyway, isn't she?
Yeah,
Andorra. So, and I love the clothes she's wearing. I love the idea that she's not classic outfit. I don't think
pajamas. We see
her in classic outfit. Dresses up good. They dress
there's
it.
There's one time she appears as that, and that's when Samantha tells her that Darren's going to apologize to her, and then most of the time she starts to wear her own clothes, which I like that better. Mm-hmm. I don't know why witches have to wear pajamas all the time like that. I mean, it looks silly and whatever.
It's a shroud. You wear them to look pretty and let the energies flow.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing.
But
phenomenal. Before she pops over to Samantha, is she just like lounging around at home? Because when she goes out in public, she snaps her fingers and she's dressed or whatever she's going to do. So basically she's just sitting at home and she's like, I'm going to pop in and see without, because obviously she's not expected to be seen in public, is she? She's not come, you know, and to be honest, whenever she's dressed, she's like, oh, I just come back, you know, she brought the cake from Paris, didn't she?
Right.
So she's dressed for that and everything like that. So, but another thing that's, you know, we were talking about this when Darren was turned into a monkey, a chimpanzee, and about like how they're trapped inside that, the body of the animal, and they have every memory of what's going on. And then Andorra, and they actually brought this through that, oh, Uncle Arthur says, oh, you know, don't you realize that she's trapped inside that parrot? She can't get out. She's going to live her life inside that parrot. So now we know that, you know, when they become the animal, they're actually trapped in there, and they're totally aware of what's going on around them. So there's some kind of magical bit of carry through with that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before we had, you know, people turn into cats or whatever like that,
right.
We were never quite sure, you know, how much of their consciousness is inside that animal, but apparently their whole consciousness is.
Yeah, that's true. Like with the Siamese cat and then the poodle dog and the, you know, I think that was one of Darren's, one of McMahon and Tate's clients when Samantha turns him into a poodle.
I love that one too.
I don't think he remembers, though. I think he kind of vaguely does, but that also could be because he's inebriated.
Darren always remembers when he goes through the anthropomorphic
change. Most of the time, they seem to.
Well, I mean, Darren, I mean, basically, he wrote as Darren. He was reading newspapers as Darren, and you know what I mean? So when he was a chimpanzee, sort of thing, so. And this one, the parrot said, you know, we go to Andorra, and the parrot spoke to him, sort of thing. Said something. I couldn't make out exactly what she said, but it was kind of like an Andorra parrot voice, which is quite funny. Sort of. And actually, this was filmed in July 16th, 1965. This is the first of 10 appearances of Paul Lynn as Uncle Arthur. So Paul Lynn appeared in 10 episodes as Uncle Arthur. So I thought there was actually, I thought there was more.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
But then you get Dr. Bombay and Serena and all these other characters start.
I'm sorry, but I've never liked Serena. Serena's probably the most annoying character. And I hate to say that because Elizabeth Montgomery plays her, but she doesn't have as much intrigue to me that I would like. She's kind of annoying.
Well, that's life.
Our next episode is episode number 6. Take 2 aspirins and a half pint of porpoise milk. Samantha gets sick and loses her powers after coming into contact with black Peruvian roses. She then starts getting green squares all over her face. Aunt Clara sends Darren off to gather items for the antidote that she will brew. These include ingredients such as bat wings, porpoise milk, eye of newt, and an ostrich feather. But it's the largest ingredient that really gets Darren into trouble. This was filmed on August 12, 1965, and it's the first supernatural illness episode remade in season 8 as Samantha's witchcraft blows a fuse. So, Jesse, what's your thought on this one?
There's a storm here, so I hope it doesn't. So I hope there's not an intro building, and the fact that Aunt Clara actually has some kind of victory in this that's not nullified later on. There's no, I mean, she does make a mistake, but ultimately she is victorious and being able to do something helpful, and that was very nice to see too. But I do love that they have like this cool little witch shop just, I'm assuming close by, since Darren managed to find it on his own to get these ingredients that he needed. Yeah, and all of those creepy witchy ingredients, like eye of newt.
What was the rest of them?
Bat wings.
I don't remember. Eye of newt, porpoise milk, bat wings.
Porpoise milk just sounds disgusting.
An ostrich feather, which they were fresh out of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought the store was kind of cool. The store owner was interesting, seemed to think Darren was a witch, but didn't question it. I mean, I always thought witches were like in this in Bewitched, I thought they were perceptive to see whether or not someone was mortal or witch. So I don't know. That's a little inconsistent. It's a bit of a gray area, but I thought this episode was a lot of fun, especially the ostrich feather incident and how Darren has that run-in with the police officer more than once.
He gets arrested in this block quite a few times.
Very, very interesting.
He's always getting arrested.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then, I don't know. I know that Gladys Kravitz, or the actress Alice Pierce, was going through the cancer, but I noticed that she started to look thinner in this episode than she usually does. So I almost wonder if she was going through that at this point, because I think she gets replaced at some point in the near future. I don't know, that was another thing I noticed here. What else did I notice? Yeah, there's so many interesting funny things going on in this episode, with, you know, her going up into the weird door upstairs.
Yeah, the door takes the place of the window, and it kind of, then they're going to build a room. Actually, built the door first. We got to get out there to build the room.
That was funny. And then she hears a knock later on and starts like talking to herself. And Abner's just like, oh my God, he looks so embarrassed by just the constant embarrassment.
Abner, he's like the typical retired Archie Bunker type that just doesn't want to deal with anything.
Definitely.
Eat his paper, drink his beer, smoke a cigar, be left alone.
Well, I mean, did you notice one thing about Gladys, though? She comes, she goes, oh, you know, Samantha must be sick. Oh, because she, you know, she sees that Samantha's getting dots on her face, or, well, squares, I guess. But then she's like, oh, well, she likes some of my chicken soup, you know, make her feel better. He goes, oh, well, you know, and then, you know, Abner says what he says, you know, your chicken soup pretty much kills people. But then she decides to bring it over to her anyway. She doesn't even knock. She just goes right in and right up the stairs into the bedroom.
I know. She goes, well, I tried to knock.
Who does that?
I would kill my neighbors if they just walked in my door.
No, you didn't.
It just walked into my bedroom. It was like, what are you doing?
I know.
Yeah, even for the 60s, I'm sorry, but no one ever wants anyone in their space like that. Like, no one wants just anyone to waltz in at any given time, especially if you have magical powers that you're trying to hide from the rest of the world. It's like, do they never lock the door? You know, you'd think having a nosy neighbor like Gladys.
Even if you're well, last person, I mean, the thing is, if you're well, let's understand you're just lounging in bed. You don't want your neighbor just to come up. I mean, your neighbor can come into your living room. That's probably not, I mean, it's irritating, but not as irritating as someone just walking into your bedroom when you're in bed. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I'm here. It's like, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah.
You know, so that was going. Like, and I mean, speaking of bedrooms, I mean, how long was Abner in bed for when Gladys is looking out the window for most of the episode as people are coming and going, the doctor's coming and going? She's just at the window the whole time. This is like, you know, and Abner's like, Abner's reading the newspaper. So I don't know how big this newspaper is, but I mean, you have to think about, like, he basically is reading the newspaper for like 3 or 4 hours, and Gladys is at the window for 3 or 4 hours because Darren goes out. I mean, first of all, the doctor comes in, so Gladys is at the window, and then of course the doctor has to see her and stuff like that. She's like, you know, 20 minutes 20 30 minutes. And then he leaves. And of course, Aunt Clara goes, oh, can you go get these ingredients for me? So Darren goes to the shop. And the shop doesn't look like it's in town. It looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere. Because when he opens the door, you kind of see a bit of the outside. And it looks like kind of a wooded area. It doesn't look like it's in the middle of the...
Speaking of the geography, I'm just going to run this by you because I think you look at the fandom pages like I do, Keith. And it said bloopers and continuity errors. Bewitched is set in the New York City metro area, but behind the police sergeant's desk is a map of Los Angeles.
It's probably true.
Didn't we say that we thought it was set in New York City? Or I mean, well, in Los Angeles, but technically it's not. It's in the New York metro area. I did not know that.
Someone told me that one of the comments that we got about Bewitched when we tried to like place it, because I always assumed it was in LA only because everything feels very California like.
Yeah.
But this one said, no, it's one of the New England states that's set in, sort of thing.
Well, she gets to Salem really quick when that happens.
Yeah, but she just zaps in, zaps out, sort of thing. So, I mean, but I was, it's only because everything has a very California feel. There's not this New York 1960s.
Right.
mid-60s feel to it, so, or even a 1960s suburban feel. Even the outside of the house looks like a California new houses.
It could be Connecticut too. It could totally pass for Connecticut.
Yeah, precisely. So but someone told me that basically no, they're in like Connecticut, Rhode Island, that area sort of thing. And that's, you know, he commutes to work. But then again, if he's commuting to work to New York City, I mean, the thing is, another thing, we never see the outside of Darren's.
They showed it once, I think. They showed it once, and all it was just a plain, you know, probably recycled building, you know, that people take pictures of. But that was it. You don't see any skyline.
But we know it's somewhere. We know it's somewhere in suburbia.
Somewhere in suburbia. Yeah. But I was always. But the fandom page says it's New York metro area. I did not know that.
Well, we know that Darren and Samantha can drive to Darren's office quite freely. So, I mean, and another thing, that if it's New York, normally what happens if you live in a suburban area, you normally take the train into town, don't you? Into Manhattan.
Well, they talk about taking trains a lot. And I thought that in the beginning, and then I thought, wow, I didn't know that trains ran like that in L.A. But for some reason, I had it hung up in my mind. This was L.A. And when I read that yesterday doing review, I just, oh, my God, it's New England or New York metro area. And I didn't know that.
Well, it does have a real, I mean, another thing, maybe we think L.A. because it has a real backlot feel about this. That was filmed.
Yeah, maybe. But I always tell our other, you know, Joe Rondonzo all the time, I learn something new from everybody every day. So,
yeah. But yeah. I mean, Aunt Clara's sweetness is what Jesse was saying. There's, I like the way that, you know, they treat her, and there's always.
Yeah, you see, Darren is so kind to her, and he hates most of her family, but he tolerates her mistakes. And so there's that humanist kind of whatever coming into the mix that they, you know, she's so loving. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body. Everybody needs an Aunt Clara. I don't care. Mm-hmm. She can trust me anytime.
When we first introduced Aunt Clara anyway, she's kind of being bullied by the other witches anyway.
Yeah, she was.
And I think that, and because there's a sweetness to her, that I also think because of her age as well, because there's the doubteriness to her, is that anything that she says, you don't have to worry about it too much because people think, oh, she's sweet. She might be a bit mad, but she's sweet, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny there for a minute. It's like, oh, wow, she's got her mojo back. She's doing magic. but it doesn't.
This brings us to episode number 7, Trick or Treat. And Dora wants Samantha to go away with her to celebrate a traditional Halloween ceremony. Darren wants Samantha at home to host a party for a potential new client, Jack Rogers, played by Jack Collins. Seeking revenge, and Dora turns herself into a little girl trick-or-treater, played by Maureen McCormick, other known as Marsha Brady.
Oh, I thought that was her.
And places a spell on Darren that slowly turns him into a werewolf. But as Jack Rogers' company makes Halloween profits, this might not be such a bad thing. And this was filmed on July 29th, 1965. So, thought the trick-or-treat.
I couldn't tell that was Maureen McCormick in the beginning. Now that you say so, it's like, oh my God, it is Maureen McCormick. I did not know that.
I always thought it was funny how she said werewolf. It sounds like she's saying werewolf instead of werewolf.
You know what I quite liked about Maureen McCormick?
Yeah, werewolf.
Playing, when Endora goes a little girl and plays Maureen McCormick. Maureen McCormick, this is her second appearance in Bewitched.
Yeah.
Her first appearance is when Darren has that dream of what their children will be.
Yeah, and messing around with them in the office and stuff.
So it kind of gives oh my God, this is like, you know, this could be, you know, what their child's going to look like sort of thing. You know what I mean? It's actually, there's a family resemblance now because they brought this same actress back to play, you know, Endora as a little
girl.
She
makes a great little Endora too. I was like loving that. I just thought that I got such a hoot.
She got the mannerisms as young as she was. She captured the way that Endora speaks as well as she moves. So I was really impressed with that because that's hard to do. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anyone. I mean, Shirley MacLaine couldn't even capture that when she played Endora's character in whatever the hell that was with their take on Bewitched.
Nicole Kidman.
So I was kind of impressed that a little girl could do it. I thought that was cool. She really did. Yeah, it was so entertaining. I love this episode.
They got the blue eyeshadow going on, and those
exactly,
sad eyes,
yeah, that
those,
too.
The eyeliner slants. That just perfect makeup for Becca. Mm-hmm. Endora wears a lot of makeup, but everybody did back then. And I love the makeup. Oh my God, I just get such a kick out of it.
I love the lines that they gave her as well. I mean, they gave Maureen McCormick some difficult lines to say, and she delivers them.
Yeah.
They weren't easy lines to say. I mean, if you look at what she was saying about, about the curse and stuff.
Especially
like that.
For her age, because she's not the Marsha Brady from Brady Bunch. She's really young here. Really young here.
And she's getting some parts and as character actors and
several
sitcoms.
Well, yeah, kids are not always the best actors. Sometimes they're really bad. Like even today, it's very rare for me to see kid actors that are really good, but she does a really good job and totally outshines most kid actors that I've seen in like modern day television. So I don't know what the difference was. I don't know if kids were just taught differently. I don't know.
Well, the thing is normally when you have like a really good child actor, there's something a bit weird about them. Like Haley Joel Osment, like, or Thora Birch, when he used to do interviews when they were little kids and the way they speak is like, oh, you're not a child. You're like a dwarf. You're like an adult trapped in a little person's body. So there's never, when you see them on screen, it's like, yeah, they're good. They're, you know, whatever role they give them difficult roles and they're very good. But at the same time, they're not child or human. Where here, Maureen McCormick does feel like you're watching a child sort of thing. But even though
she has the childish take on Endora, like, oh, yeah. I'll try really hard to remember the word. It kind of reminded me of like some of the things Sarah would say from Dark Shadows, except she was being snide and protective.
Well, Sarah from Dark Shadows was a bad actress.
Transformed
into that. Who was? Who's a bad actress?
Sarah. Sharon Lentz is Sarah Collins. When she was a little girl, I mean, she might be a good actress now, but at that time, I mean, the way she delivered line. Well, she uses it. I mean, just go, David, I want to play with you.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of works though, because it kind of comes off as like a spoiled child making demands. And she was from a wealthy family, so it kind of worked.
Well, David was a bad actor at the beginning. He got better as the season.
Yeah, he did get better
as the series went on.
That's true. He did kind of run his lines, like as lines, especially with Miss Winters. Like, Miss Winters, I thought we were going to go over to the park today, and it would just be very bland and like, okay,
it's that probably storm like and thundering and lightning outside because that's all it does.
I don't like you anymore. You're not my mother. Boom, boom, boom. Upstairs you go.
But wait till you get to the episodes. When you get to the episodes where Quentin's there, David really, you could tell he's really gotten really good by then.
Yeah, he gets. I mean, the better he got, sort of thing.
But it was a great episode. It was out of all of them. Wasn't particularly my favorite, but I loved the little Endora. I did not know that was Maureen McCormick, but I'm going to probably rewatch it now because I'll have to, because that drives me nuts if I didn't catch it the first time. But
I love Darren turning into the werewolf. I love the werewolf.
Oh my God, I know. And he kept going back and forth and he kept shaving. He's trying to shave the hair off.
So funny. So funny.
And you got the teeth going on. And then you got that idiot guy in the living room waiting for him that the campaign, they want his campaign. And don't forget the ugly, was this also one with the ugly witches that they wanted to hang on the doors?
Yeah.
Halloween.
Yeah. That was, yeah.
Endora and Samantha. So just like, you know, just they don't want to be bothered on Halloween. It's obvious. This is our second Halloween, right?
I will say I was kind of disappointed with how I felt like they led up to like a really big extravagant episode because it was Halloween. So I was kind of disappointed that they made it sound like something big was going to happen, you know, because I'm trying to remember which episode, but do you remember that episode where Endora is like a glowing ball and appears to Samantha as like this glowing ball and it becomes like this really interesting magical episode? I was kind of expecting something like that here, and I was kind of disappointed nothing more magical and Halloween-y happened aside from this. That was the only thing I was disappointed about with this episode, and I thought if they would have had that, it would have made the episode better. Because I do wish magical stuff happened. I know because of the times and stuff, and you know, even as much as they had as far as magic is concerned, it was as risky as they could be at the time, but I still would have wished that they could do a little bit more with the witchy magic.
I would have liked them to do a little bit more with Halloween too, as well. Cause I mean, they do Christmas up, but Halloween is the witch's holiday. Just like, you know, like,
Exactly.
I guess another thing is if Darren and Samantha are having a cocktail party for Halloween, you would have think that the guests would have dressed up a little bit.
No, yeah, I was that kind of stuff.
Larry and Louise and the
exactly, yeah.
Just a little bit, considering that they sell Halloween props and stuff like that. And they didn't decorate the house for Halloween. Okay, maybe you didn't have to put the witches up, but there are other Halloween decorations you could have put up. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's the witches' holiday. Like the witches, like in real life, have their own way of celebrating Halloween, even if they don't put up like witches and skeletons in their house. Like there's other really interesting, fascinating mythology that I wish they could have played into even a little bit. Even if they had like, I wish there would have been a conflict with like Samantha having like some of her family over. Yeah, like if Samantha had her family and then had to also entertain like guests of Darren's clients, that would have been really interesting, especially if there's like a costume party. It would have been perfect for like Halloween witchy shenanigans to go on under the guise of Halloween. So no one really thought it was actual magic, but rather just a bunch of going on.
His Wolfman makeup was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that was good. I just wish there would have been more of that. Like if we did that today, there'd be so many cool.
He starts tearing the pillow apart.
Telling Samantha to lock him up.
My dogs do that. I tear the pillows apart. It's like, stop that.
I like it when he has the Lee Press-on nails on.
Oh yeah, that was ridiculous. Oh, that was the only part. Yeah. It was a very campy take on the werewolf, that's for sure.
Well, it was very much in the vein of I Was a Teenage Werewolf and Michael Landon.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
You know, it wasn't the American Werewolf where basically, you know, his clothes are ripping and you know, the jaw comes out of his face sort of thing. But,
the American Werewolf.
I mean, I thought it was, it's quite cute. I did question about like, well, you know, you don't have to put the witches stuff up, but you could have decorated. I also sit there and say, as far as Darren saying that Samantha couldn't go, I can understand the reasonings behind that because, oh, she's pregnant. It's not, you know, she shouldn't be traveling because he's like worried about her. So it wasn't like I forbid her to go because it's a witches thing. It's more I don't want her to go because she's pregnant and I care about her health.
That's back in the day when women were treated with kid gloves and stayed in the hospital for a week after they had delivered. Now it's like, you're lucky if you get to spend the night because of your insurance now when you're in the hospital. You just push that baby out.
Oh, they did the same thing.
And then go back to milking the cow.
Stitches up to your backside and all. They don't care.
They do the same thing here as well. If you give birth in the morning, you're out by evening. You're home with that baby in the evening. So
yeah, it's like, you know, I would at least want 2 days. Like, hook me up with a morphine machine and let me lay here. You know, but don't make me.
I remember when my sisters were born. It's just like, you know, and then because kids couldn't go to the hospital, so basically my dad would drive us. Because my mom would be in hospital for a week. So my dad would drive me to the hospital and my mom would look out the window with the baby and like wave from us, from her, you know, whatever floor she was on from the window sort of thing. Because she'd be there for a week.
Not to mention the car carriers we've sent home with. They're like rubber rods or whatever. And you just plop the baby. And my mom just carried me out. All of us were just carried home in the car, front seat of the car. And we
on your lap. Britney Spears carrying the baby on your lap. Driving away.
Poor Britney Spears. Don't get me going on that one. I feel so sorry for that girl right now. Someone needs to wax her father. He needs to go.
I mean, I guess I understand why they didn't dress the dress people up. I guess if they did, the other people were dressed up in Halloween costumes. I guess Darren turning into a werewolf might have got lost within the whole.
Yeah, I think it was there just to set the tone because he always seems to come out of it like some kind of chaotic tragedy happens. But he always seems to bounce back from it, and he always sells his account. So he always gets his account. Why they're not living in a mansion by now, I don't know, because they would be lost without Darren Stevens.
I do have to sit there and say, though, what I quite liked about this episode as well is that we get Darren breaking the third wall this time. And basically what happens is when Andorra goes, oh, I knew this spell all along. I need to teach you a lesson. And Darren gets a little bit irritated, but at the same time when Andorra goes off, he just looks at the camera and goes, and, you know, shrugs his shoulders and kind of gives a smile. And I thought that was quite a nice little thing. And he didn't really have a terrible go at Andorra about that, considering that if he did, he had every right to, really. I mean, this is kind of going above beyond, because to be honest, the problem wasn't Darren in this scenario. The problem basically, Darren understands the whole thing and he was very sympathetic. And when he said the Halloween, he didn't know anything about the Halloween decorations that were being sent over or like that. So he had no clues. He had no part of that. So to be honest, if Dendora really wanted to make a point here, what she should have done is made the point to the right person. Right. I think Dendora was...
I wish she would do something to Larry at some point. That would be great.
Yeah.
Larry, he's such a fair weather friend. I mean, he treats Darren like shit sometimes, most of the time. And then but then when he does something, he's like the biggest pal going, you know, Larry's kind of.
Well, imagine if he was the one that was transformed into a werewolf. How funny would that be? I don't know. I want to see him be in some kind of precarious situation. Yeah. Thanks to Andorra or some other person.
I have to say that Andorra also shows some great strength here when the ad executive or Jack Rogers, played by Jack Collins, when he sits there and goes, oh, talks to Andorra like she's in a costume. It's like, what the hell is he talking about? Because she's in normal clothes. Yeah. She's not in her witch's clothing. You know, she's not in her zappy, you know, acid green and purple outfit. She's like in normal clothes. And he goes, oh, look at her hair. It's like, that was kind of like a bit uncalled for. I mean, she does give him a tail as she's walking.
I know. I didn't get that either because she was dressed in like probably her most normal outfits out of all of the normal clothing she wears. She wasn't wearing like some Egyptian gown with like bright colors and dangly earrings or anything. It was very normal, especially for most women, period. Exactly. So I was confused by that too. Like, she's probably dressed like most women of the period. What's so weird about that? Maybe the eyeshadow, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, precisely. If he says something about her eyeshadow and not her hair, I could understand more, maybe. You know,
but why does she look like I Dream of Jeannie, though? Maureen McCormick.
I know. I thought there's a vague resemblance to that too. She looked more like I Dream of Jeannie, the style attire, than she did like a gypsy. But I don't know.
And her voice was interesting. Maureen McCormick's voice
was very high pitched.
Well, she's a little girl.
It almost sounded like I know, but it almost sounded like, you know, when you speed up a person's voice, it had like that kind of like Mickey Mouse high pitched thing going on.
It had a grovelly sense to it. It's like it was a high pitched grovel voice because it was like she had sand in her voice at the same time. It was kind of strange.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It was very distracting for me too. But I don't know if that was like something they did to add something to her character, if that's what she did, like to her voice. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't know what one could do to one's
maybe
voice.
Maybe it's to make her sound like that, older. But... Make her seem young, but sound older or something. I don't know. Episode number 8, A Very Informal Dress. Aunt Claire provides Samantha and Darren with new clothes to wear at an important cocktail party for prospective client Charles Barlow, played by Max Showalter. Barlow's company makes the Mother Jenny line of not very good tasting health food products. Sam and Darren's clothes begin to vanish soon after their arrival. This ultimately gets Darren into a bit of trouble with the police, thanks to more of Aunt Clara's magic and a drunk Dick Wilson that Darren is in a cell with. He manages to beat the rap. Hardy Albright appears as Judge Crosetti. This was filmed in June 14, 1965. And Jesse, what are your thoughts of the very informal dress?
Do you know who Mr. Whipple is?
I mean,
yeah.
Does he?
Gonna squeeze the Charmin.
Who?
I just thought I'd ask because he's younger than us.
Is he from something else?
No, he used to play.
Yeah, he was in the 70s and 80s. He did a commercial about Charmin. And basically, he played a shopkeeper. And basically, Charmin was a toilet paper.
Oh.
And he said, don't squeeze the Charmin.
He'd get upset when people would squeeze his Charmin.
Because yeah, it was so soft.
Oh, I see.
And that's where he comes
from. I see.
From.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I like this episode. I thought this episode was fun. I don't think it was as entertaining as the rest of them or as good, but I thought it was cute. And I knew this was going to happen, you know, because Aunt Clara, she's always, you know, muddling up her spells.
She's like, oh, yeah, because it's working.
Yeah, and she did make really nice outfits for both of them.
Darren's outfit was better.
I don't know.
Darren's suit was also really well cut.
Darren also seemed very hesitant to accept the outfit, even though it was like probably one of the most normal things he could have received from her. And it was a very nice suit. I'm surprised he wasn't just more appreciative and like, oh, wow, thank you. But he was like very hesitant and uncomfortable to wear it. I'm like, what is your issue, dude?
Well, with good reason.
I'm trying to understand.
He kind of knew that, you know.
Yeah, but
streaking around and let the police chase him around the car.
That was funny. That was very, very funny.
Poor drunk.
That almost that scene reminded me of like one of those old cartoons from like the 1920s where like the characters are chasing after each other with like sticks and stuff and they're just going through all kinds of crazy, you know. Yeah, back in the day when Betty Boop was still a poodle or whatever the hell kind of dog she was. Did you know she was a dog? Yeah, she was a dog well before she ever became like the, I don't know, sexy Marilyn Monroe type character that she was.
Betty Boop was a dog.
But yeah, she used to be a dog. Yep.
I gotta Google this.
Believe it or not.
It's drive me nuts.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
I know
it's
that.
It's so bizarre.
How did Betty Boop evolve from a dog?
Because it's called animation.
I do not know.
I know, but still. Yeah.
Well, it's been like Mickey Mouse evolved from a rat. You know, if you look at Mickey Mouse, he had like really ratty features and stuff like this. And then eventually they rounded him out to be Mickey Mouse sort of thing. So over a period of time. I mean, this episode, I had to sit there and say that, you know, Darren, at first he goes, oh, about Aunt Clara, oh, what's she doing here? But then he kind of settles down to it. And, you know, he does make the face when with the clothes for Samantha, which I sit there and say they look better on than did on the rack. They were a bit square on the rack. But when she put it on, of course, it fits her well.
Yeah.
And I think, but his suit looked fantastic. And I like that they took Aunt Clara to the party sort of thing. And I love how they just let Aunt Clara speak to whoever they want to. Because, you know, God knows what she's telling people. But I quite like it. I quite like that they're they love her so much. It's like, you know, not they're going to let her just be herself and she can just mix with whoever. I like that they don't worry about her. Like, normal people, normally what we get with other characters in Samantha's family is that they're going to be mixing with normal people, the mortal people of Darren's world. Then normally get, oh, Darren freaking out about who they're going to talk to, how it's going to be said, how they're going to behave. What I love with Aunt Clara is they let her just be Aunt Clara. And that she was able to, get rid of the fire hydrant and all the, she does some good stuff. And of course, there's an expiry date on her magic anyway, sort of thing. But the only thing I kind of wish, that if the show was a little bit more risque, because when Samantha Close starts disappearing, she just disappears with just a sleeve gone. And I think it would have been more funny if she was just there in her slip or something. If you know what I mean?
They did that with Darren, but they didn't do that with her.
I know she's pregnant at this point, so they're covering up her pregnancy because I think she's a lot more pregnant
than supposed to be in the show. True. So.
Covering up who's pregnant?
That's true. Samantha's? Maybe that was.
Yeah, because Samantha's only supposed to be a couple months pregnant, but I think in the show, I think she's like 6 months pregnant. So
she looks a lot bigger.
Because if it was another character like Sheila or something, I feel like they'd be more apt to do that because I've seen them do that to characters like in I Dream of Jeannie. They definitely did that when there was an episode where Tony Nelson is given X-ray vision by Jeannie and he's like seeing his secretary's underwear and brown panties and stuff.
Episode.
I love that. And I'm like, maybe it was still too early. I don't know if they would have done that if Samantha wasn't pregnant, but it would have been more interesting.
It must have been like a formula back then to have like the buddy system with these guys. You have the kind good doer, like general, or was it the Major Healy or whatever, but he's also like the pain in the butt friend, like Larry is, like he's kind of the same deal. But I mean, they're out for themselves, basically. That's really all.
True, yeah. Especially when some beautiful blonde or brunette comes along. They don't even care about the name.
I mean, Larry.
Yeah, well, at least he was single. Larry's married.
No, Larry's an asshole. He just is. I would kill him if I was his wife.
I know, and Louise is so understanding and patient with Larry. It's ridiculous.
He doesn't even try to hide it.
I mean, I think this episode, I think it starts off well, but I do think it kind of peters out at the end for some reason.
I agree. You know? I agree. And it feels very drawn out, I guess you could say. It feels very drawn out as far as...
It's like another writer.
I don't know. I didn't really enjoy the drunk thing. I mean, you expected that to happen, so it was kind of annoying to see it drag out with the the drunkard in the jail cell. I didn't really like.
Well, it was kind of funny watching him.
Funny either.
He was hallucinating this and hallucinating. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't find that funny. I found the courtroom scene funnier than that.
Yeah, I did part. Too.
Also, I feel like I see this character all the time. I swear, I also see him in episodes of I Dream of Jeannie doing the same
thing. He probably was. He was on a lot of stuff.
I've seen him in movies play the drunk character.
As the drunk?
Yeah, he always plays the drunk character.
Drunk character, though.
I don't really find that funny. As far as, drunk characters or bar characters in Bewitched being funny, I think the more funny but not super hilarious characters would be, when Darren's going to the bar because he's having trouble adapting to Samantha's witchy lifestyle. And that guy's there acting like he did something to help Darren. Even though they're both having totally separate conversations and neither of them is paying attention to the other. Mm. And then he walks away acting like he did something for Darren. Like, I guess that's kind of funny, but I don't know. I didn't really think this guy was funny. He was more annoying to me than anything, but.
And I thought Charles Barlow, the guy, was a bit horrible as well.
Who?
They're going to give a ride to the airport too when Darren's parents disappear.
Yeah, that was kind of a messed up kind of situation too.
I think it's, to be honest, I don't know if he's a bad actor or a good actor, but his face is annoying. There's something really annoying about his face.
I also found their resolve annoying with how, I wanted someone to say that your product sucks, but this weird shenanigans kind of took away from that. So they didn't have to say or do anything. And I'm like, well, now the guy's going to try to sell his product with someone else, which why couldn't someone just say your product's terrible? Like, Aunt Clara's the only person that did. But McMahon and Tate should have said something. He's the client. Like, if your product sucks, your product sucks. Like, you shouldn't stand behind it. I don't know. I wish someone would have. I was looking forward to a confrontation.
That was kind of weird.
Dealing with that. Really, and
they're trying to jump all over, you know, the client, and they want this client. But the food, what is it, like a vegan thing?
Yeah.
That they're trying to sell. And I mean, it just tastes.
Well, strawberry jam was horrible, and yeah. The punch was horrible.
I wonder what they. I mean, even vegans find ways to make things taste really good. I mean, I have some seriously vegan.
Well, I mean, food. This is the 60s. I think veganism was a bit like behind the times by this point. I think if you're a vegan in the 60s,
definitely.
I think you just like ate fruit off the vine. That's pretty much
probably because there's
you can't go to a restaurant.
Well, that was like the world of meat and potatoes back then, you know?
I know. So if you went to a restaurant and goes, I just want a salad, they would just basically like take you out back and burn you up the steak for being a witch.
I know.
I mean, they had some crazy recipes back then. I've seen some like really bizarre, like Jell-O.
Such like as?
Tuna dip. And Jell-O dip? Like, I don't know, different
well, Jello,
weird it was Jello stuff.
And cottage the Jello cheese. Molds with the fruit in it and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, what about Jello and cottage like cheese salad fish. As well?
Jello salad.
Yeah.
Some of that. I watch videos pretty good, of like Jess. Vintage. Don't knock it, man.
No, I don't doubt that. But no, there was still also some really bizarre.
It was bizarre. Yeah.
And it was all brightly colored as well.
Very.
Yeah. And it must have been because
they kind of always clash the avocado the nuclear refrigerator. Age.
I think it was probably because it was coming off the nuclear age that they were trying to make, you know, things like Jell-O, things that you could have in a bomb shelter last and make meals out of it. Maybe that's what I'm guessing. Just spam, because spam it was, seems
spam was spam. Big at this point.
Spam. Exactly. A lot of
if you went to a
long-lasting food.
If you went to a cocktail party, it's normally like a toothpick with like a square of cheese on it with a little bit of pineapple.
And spam.
Which I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I do like canned meat. It's kind of good sometimes. Like canned chicken and salad or canned just chicken. Eating well, it from depends. The can is good.
You're not getting the whole chicken stuffed in the can by Sweet Sue, are you? I don't know anybody that has bought the whole chicken in the can. I just know that just looks like toe man poisoning just waiting to happen.
Ew.
It's a no, whole chicken. Like go look at the grocery can. Store. You get your chicken breast in the can like tuna, but this is a whole chicken they shove in the can. I have never tried once in my life to eat something.
Me
like
either.
That.
I've never tried anything like that.
I used to like the deviled ham though. You remember Underwood's deviled ham?
They still make it. I love it.
Oh yeah, yeah, still yeah, like yeah. That shit.
And I like a little devil on the outside. A little red devil dancing sort of thing.
Yeah, they'll probably get rid of him soon too.
Probably. Yeah.
They'll be with it.
I'm sure.
I'm sure he's offended people as much as Mr. Planter.
Planter's peanut dude.
I mean, overall, I mean, it's not a bad episode. It's not a horrible episode, but no. I did find it.
Didn't it seem like they switched writers or something in the middle of the show?
Something happened.
Well, it had two writers. It had two writers happened. To it, sort of thing. It had Paul David and John L. Green. So there's two writers that wrote this.
That's surprising. It's surprising that there's two writers and yet not much really. Happened. Yeah, I feel like this episode, not much happened. So it was kind of...
I think it was a like premise that they had, but they didn't flesh out the story. The premise is good about the disappearing clothing. But they could have... I mean, they could have had like the clothes and like slowly start dissolving. That would have been quite good. Instead of just popping off sort of thing. Because to be honest...
Yeah, but it was like an...
Police officer.
Why would the clothes just... Parts of the clothes pop off though? It's like... You know, let's face it, Darren's suit wouldn't just be the bottoms, it would be the whole suit, wouldn't it? So you'd just be there in all his, just his underwear.
Yeah.
And Samantha wouldn't just be a sleeve, it was like a outfit, wouldn't it?
I feel like it was a bad time for this particular episode. Maybe they should have waited, done it earlier or done it after her pregnancy or something, because I do feel like there was some kind of restriction because, I don't know,
it's not
I
like
just...
she's doing stunt, sweetie, or anything like that, but...
I think it's more of the body, thing because the thing is at this point, if you notice that her clothing is very, very baggy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, she's pregnant in actuality. So,
yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff where she's standing behind a table, or she's standing behind the sofa, or she's in bed, you know, sort of thing.
Well, they've announced the fact that she's pregnant, though, right?
Last season. The thing is, she's only supposed to be like a month.
So I don't think pregnant, they're not still hiding.
She's a lot further along in real life. So
three, actually, but she just, you know how they do. It's sort of like soap operas. You see somebody's a little baby, and then 2 years later, they're 25 years old, having adventures all on their own. You know, it's just the beauty of television.
Well, you know, they can get away with that in a show because there's no sense of actual time in television. Like, you can be I mean, you don't typically think years go by in a show unless implied, but you know, weeks or months could potentially go by in a show and it would make a difference to the viewer.
So now we get to the episode where we talk about our favorite character and our least favorite character. So starting with you, Jesse, who's your favorite character and who's your least favorite character in this block?
My least favorite is definitely the client from this episode, because he was just very, very brief, underdeveloped, and just kind of annoying anyway. Might be Uncle Arthur, just because it is his first appearance. And in this particular episode, he was very, very hilarious. And I very much enjoyed the joke he played on Darren. So funny. It was almost better than anything Endora's done to him, just because he got Darren to make a
fool. It was painful to watch almost.
Yeah.
Because it's just like everybody's laughing at him and he has no clue, you know?
And what about yourself?
I know, but the fact that he just bought into Uncle Arthur's jokes. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, he did buy it. I was going to say Uncle Arthur's definitely my favorite character just because he's Uncle Arthur and he's funny. And I need to laugh.
Whatever you say, Sammy.
I know. I just love his voice, too. I mean, I don't know. There's just something about him. He's one of those people you could look at and start laughing because he's got a mischievous look in his eye, like Keith had brought up. You know, he's just got that glint. And he's like that in real life. Well, he was like that. He used to be like that in real life. So that's what makes him so genuine and so much fun to watch. Like, I don't know if he probably didn't. He don't know what Hollywood Squares are, do you? Jesse, I know he doesn't know what Hollywood Squares are, but if anybody watched Hollywood Squares, they loved watching Paul Lynn on that.
Yeah, he's center square with me always.
He was always on there. He was always on there. And least favorite, God. I would have to say it's Jesse's underdeveloped client, too. He really didn't bring a whole lot to the table, did he? You know?
He was a wasted...
Yeah, but, you know, you got to endure. She was really good, too, though, taking it on the chin, you know, and they're goofing on her. But, I mean, this was a good block of, you know, I thought they were really great. I think that one in particular.
I was very excited watching this.
Yeah, I enjoyed all these.
I mean, my least favorite is Charles Barlow, the underdeveloped, you know, the jam guy. He annoyed me. There could have been something a lot more done with him that could have made it a bit more fun. And, you know, even like the police is like, and he kind of runs off. I don't know. It just fell flat.
Well, when he's hanging out with the werewolf thing and I don't know. It's not a realistic show to begin with, but he just didn't bring it, you know?
Yeah. Now my favorite character, I'm going to go with Maureen McCormick playing Endora.
She was fantastic.
I thought she was just fantastic. The way that she goes, I still haven't thought of it yet. And just the way that she delivered her lines. And if it wasn't for that episode, I would probably said Endora, only because Endora was fantastic in the first episode that we
She's a great before. Actress, period, though. She really
and,
is.
And I know that Uncle Arthur.
Oh, definitely.
We got him coming as well. And I mean, it's followed very closely by Uncle Arthur as well. But I just thought watching Maureen McCormick do an Endor impersonation, I thought that just does it for me. I was like, oh my God.
That really was good. Quite good.
Yeah. I mean, it actually made me a little perk up. It's like, oh my God, this is really good.
I didn't even notice it was Maureen McCormick. That's just making me crazy. That's going
to
bug
me. So now we get to the point where we discuss our favorite episode of this block and our least favorite episode of this block, starting with you, Vix. What's your favorite episode of this block and your least favorite?
Least favorite. Uncle Arthur, hands down, all the way. I thought it was humorous. And as much as I love Andorra, I kind of like seeing her get it just a little bit because she really doles it out. I mean, it's just that, you know, just she does. I mean, whether she's turning somebody into a chimpanzee or toilet paper roll, doesn't really matter. She just does it. But on the other hand, it kind of made me cringe too because I hated seeing her get it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but just like, ooh, you shouldn't do that. You know,
so no, that makes sense.
Never fool with Mother Nature, you know. But that was my favorite episode. Love all the characters. I thought, you know, everybody played that off really good on each other. Least favorite episode. I'm trying to think of, why would anything be a least? I liked all of them. I'd probably have to go with a Halloween episode. Only because it felt like two people were writing it. But what did they do? Break up in halves on that? I did love Darren's werewolf attire, and I thought they did a fantastic job on the makeup. That could have been just as good on, you know, Creature Feature. You know, it was pretty good. But I mean, I really liked all these episodes. That's probably the closest to not liking them, is that one episode.
What about yourself, Jess? Your favorite and least favorite episode?
I'll start with my least favorite, just because I know instantly what it would be. It's definitely the one with the underdeveloped client, the disappearing clothes, not because the concept was bad. The concept's good. It just wasn't played out very well. And it didn't go in the direction I thought it would. In the direction I thought would have made it more interesting, at least. And then my favorite... I guess it's the Uncle Arthur one. I'm trying to think. I feel like there's one I'm forgetting.
They kind of run into each other.
It was that one.
This is the one. If I don't have it in front of me,
they do.
The episodes, they kind of run into each other on me. I don't know why. It's only this one show.
These ones are very, yeah, most of these are very fluid. I think the only one that stands out as not feeling as much a part of each other is the one that I said was my least favorite, which was the disappearing clothes, because that feels distinctly different for some reason from the rest of them. That's one of the other reasons why. Yeah, that's why it's one of my least favorites, just because it not a lot happens in it, and it just doesn't go anywhere. They build it up, but nothing happens. The most that happens is that Darren gets put in jail, but you know he's going to be fine, and that's what's frustrating, is that when you know things are fine,
he got arrested quite a few times in this plot.
Have anticipation.
It's the second.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So when that happens and you constantly see him getting help, you just don't really have any worry for him.
My favorite is The Joker is a Card, the one with Uncle Arthur. I thought that was a fantastic episode. It was the best written in his mood. It flowed very well. Very, very funny. And I love, the Uncle Arthur, Darren getting together, Samantha, Darren, and Dora, couple, the trio that's going on there, and the way that it all pans out at the end, and the way that then you got Samantha and Dora and Darren working together against Uncle Arthur, and then how it all plays out. I thought that was very, very well tightly written and very funny, and it just felt like a classic episode. And then my least favorite has to be A Very Informal Dress. It's one of those ones that has a fantastic premise. And even though I think Aunt Clara's always fantastic, I think Samantha had little to do in it, sort of thing. She looked like she was a bit checked out. I think Darren was kind of... everyone just felt like they were going through the motions. They didn't feel like... It's almost like, oh, we have this script, we have to do it. Oh, and it almost felt like, do we have to? Yeah, we have this script, we need to do it. And it just kind of felt that way. The energy seems to be a bit low. Lacking in this sort of thing.
I was saying, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I felt the same way about the show, but that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah, it just felt a bit dialed in. Well, that brings us to the end of Bewitched. Next month will be the end of our season of Bewitched, but we will be continuing, of course, in season 5, where we'll be doubling up our episodes. But next month, we'll be just doing episodes 9 through 12. And, of course, and continuing on with our Something in the Water month, which is July, of course, we'll be covering Ticks and Stung.
Ticks was disgusting.
Two films that basically what happens, if something happens, you're trying to make your cannabis stronger, you might want to think about the wildlife that you're on, drinking this as well. And of course, we'll be carrying on the Dark Shadows. And of course, July, we'll be also doing our soap episode as well. And of course, next month, we'll be finishing off our classic novels season with Moby Dick by Melville.
Herman Melville.
Sorry, my brain just totally walks out of that.
Brain's the first thing to go.
It is first thing to go. So it's good night for myself. Good night, Vicky.
Good night, everyone. Be safe.
Good night, Jesse.
Have a good night, all.
And we'll see you next week with our two for one, which is Stung from 2017 and Ticks.